Welcome back to the Sailing in the Mediterranean podcast. I'm in my car. I'm going to try to do a quick podcast. I'm on my way to the dermatologist today to have a quick skin check. They always find some pretty cancerous lesions, and I like to take care of it before I go sailing for the summer. So I'll probably get zapped a little bit with some liquid nitrogen, and I'll look ugly for a few days, but that's the cost of spending 2 months of summer in the sun. I got a couple emails from one of my listeners. He asked me to post a podcast that I'd mentioned about a friend of mine, Spike Hampson. And he has a website by that name, spikehampson.com, spikehampson.com. Spike's an adventurer. He's built a small boat, single-engine boat, doesn't travel very fast. He put it in a river that drains into the Yellowstone River and then sailed down the Yellowstone, the Ohio, and then up the Illinois River through the Great Lakes, out the St. Lawrence Seaway, I think, or he may have gone through the Erie Canal, probably the Erie Canal, then down the east coast of the United States through the Intercoastal Waterway. And the last I knew of him, he had gotten all the way over to the Turks and Caicos. His goal is to get all the way down to Buenos Aires on his little boat. So it's a great adventure. I don't know where he is right now. I interviewed him for another podcast I did that got hacked. And I just basically, rather than try to deal with all the headaches of getting this podcast up, it was called the Travel Trade Exchange Podcast, I just decided to take it off the air, which was too bad because I had a lot of great content on that website. I had some interviews with some other travelers and some other adventurers. And if I get enough feedback, I may go ahead and repost those interviews on this. But a lot of the material didn't really have anything to do with sailing in the Mediterranean. But I like people that are adventurous, and I like to hear their stories. So if there's an interest in that, I still have the audio recordings, and they are just sitting not available to the public right now on my computer. And I could get more content out on this website if there's an interest in that, but I won't put it out unless I get some feedback that there is some sort of an interest in it. Also, you're going to start hearing me repeat myself if I don't get some comments or questions from you listeners. Sometimes when you do these, you feel like you're just talking to yourself and you wonder why you bother doing that. But I know there's a few people that download this podcast. It's not a highly downloaded podcast. It's a sort of a niche group that listens to me. And today I think I'm going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, which is anchoring. When I started sailing, I read up a lot about anchoring techniques and so forth. And until you actually spend a lot of time sailing, you don't realize how important it is. I built my boat and launched it up in Bellingham, Washington, about 1990, somewhere around there. I started learning the anchoring techniques that have come to serve me well, and I learn as I go along. Most people in America don't really learn how to anchor because they tend to go in and out of marinas. In marinas, you have to learn to side tie. That's going to be a change when you go to the Mediterranean, because in the Mediterranean you learn to medmoor, which means you back into a quay or a solid concrete wall and tie off your stern and either pick up a mooring ball in the front as you're backing in or drop your anchor and back in. Just depends on where you go. Me, I always prefer to drop my anchor and back in because that gives me a lot more control in my reverse motion on my boat, because my boat does not back up. I've mentioned this before, that I've had this boat for almost 30 years now, and I still cannot consistently back up the boat. It goes whatever way it chooses to go at the time, and if there's any crosswind, all bets are off. also in the Mediterranean, when you, the reason they have med mooring techniques in the Mediterranean is there's very little tide, maybe 6 inches of tide in the Mediterranean, not much more. In the United States, if you're on an ocean, we tend to have large tides, and as a result of that, we have finger piers which go up and down with the tide. So you tie your boat to the finger pier, and the finger pier floats up and down. In the Med, they don't have that. They don't have the tide, so they can get away with this med mooring technique. You couldn't really do that in the United States because of the tides. You could on lakes, but even lakes go up and down depending on the type of lake they are. A lot of the lakes in the United States are reservoir-fed or reservoir-drained lakes, river-fed and reservoir-drained. So the level on a lake can go up and down depending on if they're using the water for irrigation or electricity generation at night. So even on lakes in the United States, we tend to have finger piers as opposed to med mooring style, where you back in and tie your stern to, or the bow. It doesn't have to be the stern, it can be the bow. And when I first started doing the med moor technique, I used to go bow in because it's so difficult to back up my boat. When I built my boat, I initially put on a hand windlass. I knew enough that I wanted to use primarily chain for my road on my anchor. Couple reasons. Number one, chain is heavier, therefore it sits more horizontal to the seafloor, and also it's not prone to chafing. I chartered a boat in French Polynesia one time, and the anchorages there were so deep that typically they would have 30, 40 feet of chain and then 100 or 200 feet or 300 feet of anchor line. And the reason for this was because the anchorages were so deep that if they had all chain, it would be very difficult to pull up and very difficult to store that much. I store about, I think it's about 250 feet of chain on my boat. I also have a spare road, a spare anchor line with about 30 feet of triple B 3/8 inch chain tied to about 300 feet of 5/8 inch braided nylon. I also have a stern line that goes out the back that's about 300 feet in length. And on the end of that, I have about 20 feet of quarter-inch chain, galvanized chain. And that's what I use normally to tie my stern off to the shore when I'm just anchoring and not med-mooring. When I'm med-mooring, I use just regular mooring lines that go off each corner of my boat, the quarter of my boat. So let's talk about my typical anchoring approach when I'm coming into anchor. First of all, I come in, I look at where everybody else is anchored, and I take my time. I'm not in a hurry. What I'm trying to do is find a location where when I swing, I'm not going to be putting other boats in danger, and where my boat's not going to be put in danger by the other boats already there. I look at where the wind is coming from, what direction the boats are pointed. If there's one boat that's pointed different than all the other boats, by a large degree, not just a little bit, but by, let's say, 90 degrees, then I'm going to assume that boat just anchored and it hasn't settled down to the wind. So that boat I'm going to be watching out for, probably not trying to anchor near that boat because I don't know where he's going to be settling down. Then I have to determine where I can anchor, because you don't want to anchor in too deep of an area, because the deeper you go, the more scope you have to let out. The theory of anchoring is the pull of the anchor, the holding power of an anchor is only horizontal, it's not vertical. If you drop an anchor in 30 feet of water and set it on the bottom of with 30 feet of chain, there is no holding power to that. It's just bobbing up and down off the bottom. And you're going to drift with the currents at that point in time. For an anchor to work, it needs to have a bite into the bottom and have horizontal pull. As a general rule, you need at least a 3-to-1 scope, preferably a 4-to-1 or 5-to-1 scope on your road. Now, that's assuming you have an all-chain line. Now, if you have chain and rope, chain and line, somebody once told me there's not a single rope on a boat. It's all lines. So if you know that, then you just caught me calling a rope on a boat. But a line, if you have a line and chain, then you're going to need to let out a lot more scope because you're not going to have the same weight on the bottom pulling horizontally should a wind come up. Then the other thing you need to consider is you have to guess at how much scope the other boats at anchor have. And sometimes it's just best to go up to the boat you're considering anchoring near, the couple of the boats that you're anchoring near, and ask them how much scope they have out. Because this will determine how much scope you can let out when you choose your anchoring spot. If somebody has let down 200 feet of line, and you choose to anchor in front of them, and you only let out 100 feet of line, if the wind shifts 180 degrees, that boat is going to be bumping into your boat. So you need to try to put out the same amount of scope as the other boats at the anchorage have already let out. This sometimes becomes a problem because quite often the other boats at the anchorage don't know how to anchor and they have not let out enough scope. I always let out enough scope regardless of how much scope the other boats at the anchorage have let out, because they're going to be dragging in the middle of the night and I want to be held in the middle of the night. Once they start dragging, it's their problem, not my problem. My problem is to keep from dragging into other boats that are already anchored. There's a real etiquette to anchoring. The boats that are there first, you need to be clear of. You need to anchor so that you are not going to interfere with them. This is not a hard rule, but it's a common sense rule and it's a courtesy rule. I am amazed at how many people out there don't have this common courtesy. Nonetheless, you act accordingly and show this courtesy to the boats that are already there when you come in to anchor. There's a story I have. I was in Turkey and I'd come into this bay early in the morning. We got up early and we had sailed early in the morning and arrived at this anchorage early in the afternoon, and there was nobody there. We looked around and we decided, okay, we're going to anchor here. And we anchored, we took a line astern, we anchored and took a line ashore and tied up to the shore. And throughout the day, little by little, other boats came in and anchored. And at the end of the day, everybody had been spread out very well around this bay. Nobody was infringing on anybody else. Everybody had about the right amount of distance between them and the boat to their right and the left, their port and starboard. And to my port was a nice French boat, a beautiful, large French. It may have been a schooner, as I recall, but it had a professional crew on board. People knew what they were doing. And it was getting late in the afternoon. It was probably 7 o'clock at night. Sun was going down around 9 o'clock in the summer. So 7:30 at night. And then a woman, an arrogant American woman on a Turkish boat, and it wasn't a charter boat, it looked like it belonged to somebody else, decided that she was going to drop at her anchor in front of me, just between me and the French boat, and back down between us. Now, there was no room for her in that position, absolutely no room, but she insisted on doing this. She started backing in. There was a slight crosswind coming from my starboard across to my port. So the wind was blowing her boat away from mine as she was trying to back in. So what she did, and this was just a classic humorous episode, just a very humorous episode, that we were drinking beers. We were sitting up on deck watching her drinking beers. We got plenty of amusement from this screw up. No other way of saying it. This total screw up. She started backing in, and as soon as she got about equal with the bow of my boat, little in front of my boat, somebody jumps over to the side, and they throw a big wad of rope over to him, and he's supposed to swim this rope ashore. And of course, it's a big rat's nest. There, it's not untangled. It's just one big rat's nest of line in the water. He starts trying to drag this big rat nest of line to the shore, and of course, he can't swim fast enough. The wind is blowing her down on the French boat. Well, she sees what's happening. The French crew gets up and puts some big fenders over their boat, and she immediately guns the engine and drags this guy that's trying to take the line ashore out with her. Gets out there again, starts backing in again, and now this guy's got to try to swim faster than the boat's backing up, and of course he can't. It's a big rat's nest. He can't. And again, they back down on him. They're meanwhile trying to bring the boat back on deck and untangle it, but again, they drift down on this French boat, and again, they gun the engine and drag it out, drag the guy swimming out with it. A third time this happens, and then they start backing down on it without taking the line out of the water, and guess what happens? Well, you figured it out. The line got caught in the propeller, and then they're stuck. Now, at that point in time, they were pretty much stuck for the night, and now they were drifting down on the French boat. So the French boat had to get up and leave and go somewhere else and find a place to anchor, and this woman on this American boat basically just anchored there. Now, that's what she should have done to begin with. What she should have done, since there was really no room to tie ashore, she should have gone out a little further, dropped her anchor, and then just swung free. There was plenty of room to swing free, and that's what she ended up doing for the night, because not only did she get the line wrapped around her propeller, but apparently it did damage to the engine, and now the engine wouldn't start, and now she couldn't even pull up her anchor when she wanted to. So don't try to crowd an anchorage. If there's not room for you, find a place where there is room for you, or swing free. Quite often, you'll come into an anchorage in the Mediterranean, and everybody's tied ashore, and you think you have to tie ashore. Well, what that leaves is one or two spots out in the middle where you can swing free. Now, the advantage of tying to shore is there's a lot more room for a lot more boats to anchor in a fairly constricted area. But if there's no more room to tie ashore, and nobody's swinging free, then you do have the opportunity to swing free. You'll probably be the last one or one of the last two or three boats to be able to come into that anchorage, but there's still room to swing free. Last year, I had the big fiasco of getting my windlass working. When I started out sailing on my boat, I had a hand windlass. A hand windlass is nice. It's mechanical. There's very little that can go wrong with it. But when you need to pull your anchor up because you're either dragging or you need to move quickly, if you're single-handing it, it's impossible. It's very dangerous. You cannot be at the cockpit and at the bow at the same time. So I converted to an electric windlass, and I fought the whole idea of having an electric windlass because I'm a Larry and Lynn party junkie, and they seem to get by fine without an electric windlass. They have a hand windlass. But when I single-handed on my boat, I like to be able to control the anchor and control the boat at the same time. So I have an electric windlass. I think it's essential to have an electric windlass if you plan on anchoring or doing any sailing where you're required to anchor by yourself. It's a safety tool. You can always pull up the anchor by hand if you have to in an emergency. Or the electric windlasses also have emergency ways to pull up the anchor using a little lever. It'd take a long time, but it's possible to do it that way. The way I have my setup is I have a long line with a push-button switch, and the push-button lets the anchor go down and also up. I like to be able to control the anchor going down. A lot of people go up and release the clutch on their windlass and let the line run out in a big pile of chain on the bottom. I don't like to do that. I like to slowly lower my anchor to the bottom. When I know I'm about the bottom, I slowly start letting it out and letting the wind take me down slowly and letting out anchor chain. When I anchor, sometimes it takes me 15, 20 minutes before I'm comfortable. I don't just come in, drop my anchor, and forget about it. No, I let it take time. I'll let it settle down. I'll see where I settle down. And many times I don't settle down where I think I'm going to be settling down. I may be closer to another boat than I like. In that case, I just pick it up and try again. There's no harm in trying again. There's harm in making a bad choice and not remedying the bad choice. If you think you're right and you can sit right in front of another boat that's already at anchor 10 feet away and you're fine, you're wrong. You need to give room between you and the next boat around you. Remember, all boats are going to swing as the currents change and as the wind changes. Where you start out ending up is not where you're going to be necessarily at the next morning. So remember, all boats are going to swing. You need to make sure when you swing, you're not going to be endangering another boat, or another boat's not going to be endangering you. And again, that comes down to how much scope do you have out on your chain and how close you are to other boats. So I like to try to be far enough away from other boats when I'm swinging free that I'm not going to be worried about it. When you're dropping an anchor and taking the line ashore, you don't have to worry about that so much. But you still are going to move from side to side, no matter how tight you have that boat stretched between your anchor and where you have it tied off ashore. There's still catenary in the line. Your boat is going to drift from side to side. And if your anchor starts sliding back a little bit, you're going to start moving more and more from side to side. I've had to reset my anchor several times over the years that I thought I had a good bite on when I've tied to shore, when a big crosswind comes up and my anchor starts to drag. It's still a pretty safe way to go. When I have a choice, I like to take a line ashore because it makes more room in the anchorage for other boats. Okay, I just got done with the doctor. He zapped my face and zapped a few spots on my ears, too. Nothing serious. That was about all. I wanted to talk about a couple other possible scenarios. Sometimes you're going to anchor in places that you have a right to be there. You're the first one there. And you just have to move because other people don't have common courtesy for you. I was in an area in Turkey called Göcek, in a bay called Wal Bay a few years ago. We had arrived early. We had a good spot. I'd been there before. I knew where I wanted to anchor. I knew where the prevailing winds were coming from. So I dropped my line, dropped my anchor, and backed in and tied off to the shore. And a few other boats came in and anchored as well. And then towards the end of the day, a big Turkish gullet came in. Now, Turkish gullets are huge wooden power boats masquerading as sailboats. They all have masts and booms and usually sails, but you never see them sailing. And if you do, they'll have their engines going as well. So they're basically just power boats masquerading as sailboats. In spite of that, I think they're beautiful boats. I like to see that they're made. I've been to many of the places that they make them. Bosburn is one of them, and that's one of the reasons I like to go back to Bosburn, is I like to see the boats under construction. The quality of craftsmanship on these boats is quite high. But he came in, he dropped an anchor, and gullets tend to let out 400, 500, 600 feet of chain. I mean, a huge amount of chain. So he dropped his anchor at one end of the bay and continued to drop anchor as he backed in to the other end of the bay, coming to stop right in front of me and a long, long line ashore. So he had cut off my escape route, basically. And I sat there and fumed and was angry and fumed and finally decided that in the worst case scenario, I might be in danger. And I decided I didn't like that. Sailing is always about anticipation. If you cannot anticipate, if you cannot think of things that might occur and try to prepare for those, then you will not be a good sailor. You need to think of what might happen, not what the conditions are right now. You need to always consider worst case scenarios and try to plan accordingly. So I decided that I couldn't put up with this. I felt that my anchor might be underneath his boat. And if I had to bail out in the middle of the night because of weather conditions, then I might be in danger. And I decided, well, there was a little restaurant, a little taverna in the same bay that had some piers, had some docks that they gave their guests. We'd planned on eating there anyway. So we decided, let's just pull up before it got too dark, because it was getting close to evening. Well, it's late evening, so it was getting dark at the time. I said, well, let's just pull up. It was calm conditions at the time. We pulled up our anchor. And my anchor was not underneath his boat, but it was very close to his boat. We went over and tied up to this rickety old pier that this restaurant had put up for its guests. And in the middle of the night, a huge, huge storm came up. A big storm. And if I had been where I was at, I would have been in a lot of trouble. As it was, a lot of other boats in the middle of the night ended up pulling up anchor and coming into this little bay and trying to tie up to this dock. And all I did, all we did the rest of the night, we were snug. We were tied up on the inside of this dock. And so we just got up and helped other people come in and tie off. And several of them ended up rafting together just to have a safe anchorage. There was one man that was almost catatonic. He was on the bow of a boat that came in. It was a charter boat. And the skipper brought it in, but he was supposed to toss me the line, but he was in a daze. He was catatonic. He would not throw the line. He just sat there with the line in his hand as he got to the dock and couldn't throw it. I'm sure he was absolutely terrified at what he just experienced. It was very strong winds. It was dangerous winds. Let's just put it that way. It was dangerous winds, but we didn't have to worry about it. And I was so happy that I just decided not to put my boat at risk and stay where I was at, even though I was there first and I had a right to be. So just don't be proud if somebody's a jerk. You can't change their behavior, but you can protect yourself, your boat, and your crew by your actions. So I was glad to do that. I talked to you in a couple podcasts ago about the worst winds I experienced last summer on a little island in Greece, just off of Rhodes. My anchor held, but I was too close to shore to feel comfortable, so I pulled up and went out. Now to the final part of this podcast, an anchoring technique that I learned a long time ago when I was with my family. We had left the island of Aegina in Greece, and we had sailed up to Cape Sounion. As we approached Cape Sounion, a strong Meltemi kicked in. Meltemi is the typical summer wind. It can be very, very strong winds coming from the north, northeast, and west. We'd planned on going around the corner to a little town around the corner and tying up in basically a marina, but the winds were too strong for us to get around the corner. Sometimes your engine will not take you into the wind. No matter how strong your engine is, the wind can be stronger. So we ended up coming into Cape Sounion, which was not known for particularly good holding, but it was all we could do. All we could do at that night. There was nowhere else to go. There were no other safe anchorages to go. We came in, we dropped our anchor, we dropped on sand, so it was sand and weed and sand and weed, and we dropped our anchor. I let out quite a bit of scope. The wind was blowing from the shore to the ocean, so if I did drag, I would drag out to open sea, so there's nothing behind me that I would bump into. So worst case scenario is we drift downwind with the wind, and that's not necessarily a good scenario. What we wanted to do was stay where we were at. Turn my GPS on. Another technique. Turn on your GPS, zoom in as tight as you can on your position, and you'll see the swing of your boat, the natural swing of your boat from side to side. Sometimes you'll be almost 90 degrees to your anchor, and then you'll swing around to be 90 degrees. Not quite 90 degrees. Maybe you'll swing in arcs of probably 100 degrees. About 150 degree arcs you'll swing in from your anchor in strong winds, back and forth and back and forth. And pretty soon on your tracker, you'll see this pattern developing. So went to bed at night. We were just swinging back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. I knew our anchor was holding. The next morning, I got up and looked at our track. I left it on all night long. And lo and behold, we were swinging back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, but about 40 feet below where we started out the night before. So sometime during the night, my anchor had given up. We had started dragging downwind, and it had grabbed again, and we had a new track that we were on. So there were two, arcs on the GPS track that I could see on my GPS. There was another boat in the anchorage as well, and it was a power boat. And I next day, I nice crystal clear water, I got in, put on my mask, and checked my anchor, dug in pretty well into the sand. I went over to look at his boat, and his boat, he had basically a standard anchor, probably a CQR, probably a 25-pound CQR, but in front of his anchor, he had a tiny little anchor that was dug in very, very well. And this is my double anchoring technique I use now all the time. Even if I think there might be a moderate wind, I will use this double anchoring technique. It's very simple. I tie a small fortress anchor on my anchor in front of my anchor. So I'll put a small fortress anchor on about maybe 8 feet of rope, or line, I should say, feet of line. And I will drop that anchor first and lower it to the ground, lower it to the sea bottom, and then slowly, when I know that it's on the sea bottom, but the other anchor's not on top of it, you have to be careful about this because you don't want to drop your anchor on top of this other one, foul it up. When it's on the bottom, start drifting back or put your boat in reverse a little bit downwind, and then just slowly lower your main anchor. In my case, it's a 35-pound CQR anchor. And then again, start drifting back, slowly letting my anchor chain out as it takes the boat back. And then when I have enough scope out, then I will put the boat in slow idle reverse, make sure my anchor's set, and then bring my engine up to full throttle in reverse to make sure I'm staying in the same spot. What I find more often than not is my CQR may be on its side totally, but the little tiny anchor in front of it is buried because it's got a fully horizontal pole. It is totally horizontal, which is the best pole on an anchor, and that is by far the easiest technique to get a very good anchor holding that I can imagine. And I learned it from this other boat next to me, and I use that all the time. And I'd never really seen it in the books. You might start seeing it now because more and more people have started to use this. When people have, in the past, in books in the past, people say, oh, use a double anchoring technique. Well, put one anchor out 45 degrees to the other side. That is so difficult to do. I've done that once or twice, and it's a real royal pain to put out two anchors at a 45-degree angle. So this is a much better. Sometimes I'll put one out windward and one out sternward. Well, that's great as long as you have the whole bay to yourself, but if there's other boats and they have a different swing pattern, then you have a very slow, a very small swing pattern, you screw up everybody else in the anchorage. So these techniques that are shown in a lot of books are, for the most part, worthless. But it's very easy to put down a little tiny anchor in front of your main anchor, and that becomes a very solid anchoring technique. So I'll just share that with you, and that's going to be it. I got to answer the phone. Take care.